Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today.
Voila, Happy New Year. So happy to know there are so many of you out there listening to us right now. This is Mike Cabella signing in, and it's my pleasure to introduce today for the very first time of the year, Nancy Meyer.
Yeah! Woohoo! Woo!
Along with us today, Bob Cabella.
Hello.
I'm not going to say a lot about it. Nancy, we'll have to fry the boy, but I'll let you go to that.
Okay. Terrific. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. We made it to 2019.
We did make it.
Yes, all right. We also are starting the year with a new sponsor. Everyone hates doing the books for their business, except us at Absolute Business Solutions. We are trustworthy bookkeepers who love crunching numbers for small business owners and entrepreneurs, so you can sleep soundly knowing every dollar in your business is 100% accounted for. You can get back to what you're good at and enjoy leading. So call us, which I want you to call Sally Doyle, to set up your free consultation at 651-208-8151. All right. Thanks, Sally, for being our sponsor for this episode. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Thanks, Sally.
So great. Yeah. Okay. So Bob Cabella is joining us. He just turned 18 in 2018.
That's true.
The end of the year.
That's accurate. Yes.
Yes. Do you feel older?
Not quite. I still feel very 17. I haven't had the opportunity to, I haven't been asked my age yet. Okay. By someone who doesn't know. So I haven't been able to say I'm 18. And when I think about it, it feels very weird. But I guess I am 18. I'm more aware of my height as I get older.
Oh,
I feel
really?
A little bit shorter. But yeah, it's not bad though.
Okay. That's funny. Well, Bob Cabella, as you have known from when we did the interview with John Choi in 2018, yeah, we did 7 episodes about the Catholic Church and what we found out in August of 2018 regarding the grand jury Pennsylvania's report. And it's had a ripple effect around the world. And we'll be hearing a lot more about it, I am told, by insiders of more. We'll learn more about the playbook and how it's how the church is being held accountable on many different levels. And we'll see how they revolutionize the church.
Fantastic.
But in the meantime, so Bob Cabella was at that. He got to meet John Choi, who's mm-hmm. the Ramsey County attorney.
I did, yeah. He's very nice.
Yeah, he was so generous. They were just terrific to work with. You did such a great job. The audio sounded great.
Thanks. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
It was a good time. So Bob Cabella works with Mike Cabella at Cabella Media. And Bob works on filming. You know, he's a videographer, photographer. He handles some of the recording and the lighting. He also has started a band. It's called Milo.
Yeah, it is.
And he's a singer. He's a songwriter. He's a multi-instrumentalist. So he plays the drums, the guitar, piano, pretty much any musical instrument you can pick up relatively quickly, I would say. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. And you've got some songs on YouTube, and you're going to be on on Spotify and all other music platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You should be able to find me anywhere that you listen to music.
So, and they look you up by your band name, Milo, M-I-L-O-E?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And you're also performing January 26th at Cadence Records in St. Paul, Minnesota at 7:10 p.m. It's a coffee and record shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool space. They have a bunch of old like vinyl records, and you can also enjoy coffee and live music.
Very cool. I'm still like vinyl.
Really?
We just back. Called them vinyl records.
Back, yeah. Records.
But now they say vinyl records. You know, it has like a bigger flair to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll have his the show times in the show notes. And Cadence is Cadence. It's Cadence Records. Well, awesome. So you were not born here in Minnesota.
Was not, no.
No, you did some traveling with your parents.
I did worldwide scale. Yeah. International.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about being growing up in the Republic of Congo.
Yeah, I grew up in the Republic of Congo. It was very hot. I really spent a lot of time outside. My parents were in choir at church, and they did a lot of music. So I grew up around a lot of music, and that's how I sort of picked it up.
When did you get your first guitar?
Oh, I didn't get my first guitar till I moved to America, I think in seventh grade. I got my own guitar. My dad had an acoustic when I got here, but he never played, and I didn't know how to play it either. Till I started taking lessons after school in middle school, and my English teacher actually taught me how to play guitar.
Oh,
yeah!
How cool was that?
Shout out to Michael Sutherland.
Michael Sutherland.
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 Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Is he still teaching?
Yeah. I think he's in South America teaching now.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, that's right. So tell us a little bit more about what you remember about life in the Republic of Congo.
I have a very specific early memory of going to some sort of studio, I think, with my parents, and they were going to record something. And I remember seeing a huge drum set just towering over me. And I really wanted to play it. I remember that vividly. I also remember another instance where my parents were rehearsing and there was like a snare drum. And I think I tried to play it and I was told to stop. But yeah, that's the earliest memories I have of having interest in music. I remember lots of singing in church. Like when I look back, it's a little bit blurry and it's all kind of one thing, but I very much hear like harmonies and lots of time at church too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And lots of soccer outside, barefoot.
Barefoot.
For hours. Great time.
And where would you go? To a special soccer field or kind of somebody's big backyard?
Front yard, backyard, the street occasionally, just with all of my friends, and we'd play for hours. I remember one time we played a game that lasted like 3 days. We'd wake up and by like 10 a.m. we'd be playing and we'd go all day till maybe 5. And then we'd come back the next day and that went on for 3 days. And we just played all day. It was pretty crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
The score got really high, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many kids were involved? Like, did you have a full team?
There's maybe 8 people.
8.
And depending on the day and depending on who showed up, it would vary. But yeah, I think I remember maybe 8 people. It was some fond memories. It was a good time.
Yeah. Okay. And as you and you've got several brothers.
Yeah. I have 3 younger brothers. There's 4 of us.
Yeah. And they're what ages now?
16, 15 or 14, and 12 or 13.
12.
I think 12, yeah.
Yeah, you're all two years apart.
Yeah, 2 years apart. It's hard to keep track of sometimes.
Yeah.
It feels like there's a lot, but yeah, just the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you moved to America?
I...
Seventh grade, 13?
No, I was 8.
You were
I moved
8.
Here in fourth grade. Yeah.
Okay. And tell us a little bit Why don't you check in emotionally how you're doing right now?
Right
because
now?
With the self-awareness mentoring journal, we all check in.
Okay.
And then we'll kind of transition your journey to America.
So on my sheet here, I said that I was observant and optimistic, but also a bit vulnerable and open.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I think whenever people are on the mic and we're having a heart-to-heart conversation, people are feeling a bit vulnerable because you're, you know, opening your heart to revealing who you are. And
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not just you guys, but just a lot of other people, too, who listen in. So that's
it's
an interesting dynamic also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're pretty private.
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well,
it depends on the person.
Okay.
I'd say,
yeah. Because I think I've known you since you moved here.
Yeah.
Almost. And yeah, you've, you don't come across to me as shy. You've always been really, you say the words you want to say or need to say.
Yeah. I try to.
Yeah.
But it does take courage, but I try to be a person who, tries to express themselves as much as they can, and I try to be honest, and I try to say what needs to be said. Yeah.
Yeah, you're good about that. Yeah. Thank you. And and Mike, how are you?
Well,
how are you feeling?
Well, I'm very curious. You know, this is the first time in my life to be on the same microphones as Bob.
Yeah.
It just stirs in me a lot of emotions like that, you know. I saw Bob growing from being a tiny little thing.
Yeah.
You know, I remember back in the day when I took him at the radio station, you know, as I was working as a journalist, and I could do some commercials with him.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
he was not even 2 years old.
Oh.
And so he could do the commercials, and they went viral. He was like a little, you know, star in town.
Yeah.
A lot of people knew about him and talked about him to this day.
I remember for years when I would go around town, especially with mom, I have like a very vivid memory of strangers asking me to like recite the line from the commercial whenever it would come up that I was the little kid on the commercial. And I think I was 6 at this point, and that commercial was done when I was like 2 or something.
Less like than 2, in fact.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tiny little baby.
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
So, but for this year, I think I feel validated. But I'm still very curious and very receptive.
Yeah.
And enthusiastic too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been very excited about this conversation for a while. And we were like, you know, not knowing exactly when. And so finally, it's here. We're talking to each other. Yeah. So, we're also talking about your journey from the Republic of Congo, which was very challenging. Both your mom and your dad have been on the mic, but we haven't heard like what that was like for you being separated from your dad. What did you understand at that time when he had to leave and come to America?
Not a whole lot at first, at least. I remember when he left, because I was playing outside and it was like early in the morning. And I remember what he was wearing too. He was wearing like an orange, it was like an orange shirt, like your orange shirt. And then he went to the airport with my mom. And I think we thought he was going to come back like a few days later. And then a couple days went by. And maybe I'm making this memory up, but I think I remember, like, my mom talking to him on the phone. And it's kind of fuzzy, but then I remember, like, finding out he was in America.
And what did that seem like, a really long time?
Well, I didn't know how long it was going to be. I don't necessarily remember. I just knew we were eventually going to come.
So that
It was a bit unclear about when, but I just knew it was going to happen. Yeah.
So you didn't have a feeling like you wouldn't see your dad again, but
no.
You knew you would be united at some point.
Yeah.
So that was that able to carry you through?
Yeah. And I definitely like having in that 3 years, just the thought of being like, I'm definitely gonna have a better life and get more opportunities, that keeps you going, keeps you very hopeful.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gave me a different perspective on everything that was happening when I was there. And it's like,
in what way?
I remember in one example, like Congo's pretty violent. There's a lot of bad stuff happening. I remember like one night we heard like gunshots or something. And just experiences like that, having that hope of like knowing that it's not for the rest of your life, is it keeps you going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember your mom talking about that experience.
Did she?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the same one.
Yeah, you were in a room for a long time.
Oh, this is a different experience.
Oh, okay.
In this one, I remember...
She was worried about feeding you and...
I don't know about that one. I do remember just... Yeah, I remember being in Kinshasa before we left. And that was a long transition period of like 6 months. Then it was definitely a time when we definitely had to have that idea as like a hope to keep going.
Because you were frightened?
And
the violence around you?
Yeah.
You were concerned about your well-being?
Kinshasa is pretty dangerous.
Okay.
But also like I think we were just struggling a little bit like without our dad. So we had to keep that within us to keep us going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet your mom was good about keeping the hope alive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I got really close to her in that time, actually. Mm. Especially in that 6 months. Because that's when we moved away from like our extended family into Kinshasa to get ready to transition over. So, yeah.
And really Sandy was just born.
Yeah. At that point, Sunday was...
That's the youngest.
Three?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Sunday was born like a week later or something. My dad had to go.
Yeah, a week after your dad left.
Yeah.
Before I left. So I only saw him for a week.
Oh,
a week.
Then that's left, right. Yeah. Okay.
So that must have been crazy.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. But, you know, I think Sylvie, my wife, did an excellent job, you know, just keeping a good mood around the family.
She's a very strong woman.
Absolutely.
And so the kids never probably got to the point where they felt like, oh, now anything can happen to us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She made them dream and realize that they will always see their dad one day, no matter what it takes. And that was really important for them.
Yeah, it was everything.
Really, it was everything, yes.
Yeah, I've never thought about that. I don't think I ever once doubted it.
Oh.
Which is interesting. I never... Yeah, so that's definitely props to her for... Because now I'm thinking that might have been a possibility, but it was never a doubt.
Yeah, she never panicked, even when she got threatened or anything like that. She didn't transfer that fear to kids, which is...
And you had to leave suddenly. Let's just refresh our memory. And I'll include in the mentoring resources the episodes with you and Sylvie.
Yeah.
But for right now, you needed to leave the country quickly.
I needed to leave, you know, having worked for PBS.
NewsHour founder.
The NewsHour, yes. Yeah. That's the program I worked on, you know, as a local journalists back home and did all that. But then when we produced the documentary in 2006, that's the one that stirred all the turmoil around me and with, you know, threats and arrest warrants and stuff like that. So I had to leave.
Yeah. Because they thought your religious content that you were bringing forward was concerning to them.
That was political, in fact.
Yeah.
You know, that was political. It was not necessarily religious. Because, you know, I used to read the news on radio and television as well. But that's totally political. You know, the documentary we did was entitled Democracy in the Rough, you know, talking about how it was the very first quote-unquote democratic elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 40 years of our independence from the Belgian. But that brought about a lot of, you know, bad stuff that the local power, I mean, the president and governors were doing. I think they heard about it because the show aired here twice or three times, I guess. Even the New York Times talked about it. Hmm. You know, New York Times gave me a credit as a videographer that year. The
wow,
New York Times.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so,
this is the first time hearing about this.
Yeah.
For many years, I get like snippets here and there.
For many years, when you went on the New York Times website, you write Mike Kabea, they'll show you this is an international videographer.
Ah.
Yeah, from that experience, yeah. But then the local authorities didn't like it, so they came up with all sorts of accusations. So my life was really at stake. You know, my life was on the line. So I was lucky enough to be gone like that, you know. And, but I had no idea what I was, you know, getting into. But I'm alive and I have beautiful boys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Beautiful wife. So.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
Yeah. You've got a good life here.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, right. We're getting all sentimental in 2019. So, take us to the journey of going to the airport and making your flight plans and coming over here.
Oh, I remember.
So you were 8 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you were the oldest, so you had in tow then to
help my mom.
Yeah, with the three younger ones.
It was definitely a journey to come over. I think it lasted more than 24 hours. I think it was 3 days. It felt like 3 days for sure. Yeah, it was 3 days. We left. Yeah, I remember this very vividly. We were at the airport at like 9 p.m. I think that's maybe when our flight had to leave, at like 9:30 or something. I remember saying goodbye to my grandmother and my aunt on my dad's side. And then I remember, and I had said goodbye to my grandmother and my mom's side earlier, like a couple weeks before, because she had to go back. And I remember being in the airport and being in some lounge, and I remember there was like a businessman. We had a lot of encounters with businessmen on this trip.
Why are you laughing?
Just because we were small, rowdy children, and for some reason, businessmen think they own the plane they're on. I remember getting up to like climbing up the stairs to get on the plane, and we turned around, and then my mom was like, wave goodbye to the Congo, and we like looked back, and it was just like trees, and it was like you could see the city a little bit. So I remember that was crazy. And then we got on the plane. I sat next to a white woman on our flight to Paris, and I remember looking out the window. Even though I didn't have the window seat, she let me look out her window. And over most of Africa was like pretty like dark. And then I remember we get to Paris and I look out the window and there's just so many lights. I'm like, oh my God. And it definitely, it was like a weird shift. And I was like, we're definitely like...
Someplace else.
Yeah, it's like your mind, your entire mindset of, and your whole worldview changes. So that was crazy. Yeah. And I felt like I was just in like on an alien world, but it's like everything I seen before and expected to see. We're in Paris. The layover was really long. We got there like 4 and we didn't leave till maybe 1. We lost my brother. We lost
Which
Jin.
One?
We Jin? Lost Jin in the airport.
Okay.
Wandered around somewhere and we maybe found him after 30 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
It was
seemed 30, like probably 45 10 minutes. Hours.
It was wild. My mom was definitely in a little bit of a panic.
Yeah.
As soon as you get to a different country, you lose one of the kids.
Yeah,
I'm
not
sure that's
good.
Very stressful.
Yeah.
I remember while we were waiting, I was trying to play an arcade game. It was the first time I'd seen an arcade game. And I walked up to some kid and asked him in French if I could get a turn. And he spoke English. And that was very frustrating. You get to France and the first person who you speak French to doesn't speak French.
Yeah, that was pretty irony.
That was very upsetting. And I remember my mom trying to tell me what to say in English because she spoke a little bit of English. And I just didn't trust that whatever she was saying was right. And it probably wasn't. Because her English is good now. So I can only imagine what it was back then.
So she's going to get a chuckle out of this when she listens.
I can't imagine that whatever she said was correct. So, and then we flew to Atlanta. And on that flight, we had the whole cabin. It was really empty. Like the whole cabin to ourselves, except for one businessman who's very annoyed because we kept switching seats. We went to like different seats in the cabin.
Your kids, of course you would.
And we were over the ocean, which was crazy. A very unique experience. And I'm sad that I didn't like look out more. I remember seeing like little white things in the ocean. And I don't think there were boats. I couldn't believe like that there are that many boats in the ocean. And I don't know what it was. Maybe trash. I don't know.
Birds?
Yeah, maybe birds. Yeah, that's possible. And we were definitely over the ocean for a really, really long time, which was a very cool and unique experience. And it was very sunny in the plane.
Yeah.
So that's nice. And I remember we turned on, we would go to a seat and turn on the TV and go to a different seat and turn that one on too. And we would just like turn on all the TVs and it must have been really annoying, but it was a great flight.
Yeah, for a long flight with 4 young kids
under
the, 8 and under.
Yeah.
I mean.
I feel bad for that man. I understand now.
I think he survived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we got to Atlanta and we were hungry. So my mom asked a strange man, a really big dude, the tallest guy I'd ever seen. And I guess maybe people in America get really tall, but it was a big black dude. And my mom asked him what she was like, we just got here from Africa. What can I feed my kids? Because, you don't know much about the food in a new culture. And he suggested chicken nuggets. So
perfect.
First meal I had in America was chicken nuggets in the airport, and they're very good. Yeah.
That's great.
And I remember when we got home, a lot of the food that we had, we requested a lot of chicken nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then from Atlanta, Georgia, you went?
Got on a plane again at night at like 9 again or like 8:30. And I sat next to this teen and my stomach was hurting so much. I think I had a headache too. Apparently, I've recently found out that I get a lot of travel anxiety.
Oh.
apparently that's something that my mom noticed from very early on. So I guess because it was such a huge event.
Like my body, first time you're on a flight, you go around.
Yeah, this
the
is
world.
My third. Yeah. That was my third flight. The travels. I'd flown a few times around the Congo.
Okay.
But that was my third flight in like 30 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
And my body's kicking into like shock or something. Okay. As it's like the journey's coming to the end.
Yeah.
Were
you anticipating like seeing your dad?
Yeah, that was going to be crazy. So that brought on a lot of I guess the best way I can describe it is anxiety, but not like a bad anxiety. Just like a anticipation, I
anticipation.
Guess.
Anticipation. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a hard feeling to describe, yeah. It's not necessarily like super positive or super bad. It's just, you're just feeling a lot.
Like, when am I going to see him?
Yeah.
Like a little anxious?
Yeah, I also just wanted like the journey to be over. I was very tired.
Yeah, right.
And it felt... And it felt very climactic. Yeah. And so I threw up on the plane. I remember
there
that.
There go the chicken nuggets.
I threw up in the bathroom, luckily, but I made a mess. I destroyed that bathroom. Just vomited all over. I feel so bad now. Headache, stomach ache. Just incredibly painful. I think my ears were...
Plugged?
Pop, yeah. And they were hurting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like in agony in my seat, just like aching. And this poor dude had to sit next to this African kid, just dying in the seat next to him. And so I apologize to that man now. He's probably in his like 20s, late 20s. Yeah, that's interesting.
And then, so you finally made it to Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport.
Yep. We land. And I remember we land and I'm still like in pain. My mom's like, wow, you're going to see your dad and you have a huge stomach. I'm like, yeah. And we get to the airport and we get all of our luggage and stuff. And then we wait in the front, the parking lot, like an underground parking lot.
Oh my gosh.
Because they were late.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh.
We wait in underground parking lot. lots of cars. Everything was loud and kind of dirty and fluorescently lit. And it was just like, it's very overwhelming. And yeah. Because we were like underground, your brain kind of starts building an image of what the outside looks like based on what you're seeing. So that was crazy. And then my dad shows up. He's like running. I think he got out of the car. And he like runs up towards us. And then he like hugs and kisses my mom. At this point, I'm just kind of like, okay.
Okay, he's really here. I'm really seeing him.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily, I don't know. I didn't know how to react. I didn't know what my reaction was. And I was very aware of myself. Oh. But yeah. And then it gets like more blurry after that. It's very vivid in that time. And I remember just being like, nice.
Yeah. My journey ends. I don't have I was to
like,
go on another plane.
I was like, all right, good. It was very like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And
I mean that must have been interesting for Sundy, because he must have been like, who's this dude?
Yeah, surprisingly, when I got there, he was staring at me like that with, you know, super open eyes.
He had seen pictures.
And then he's like,
he'd heard stories.
Papa Mike.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's so like, sweet. Papa Mike, you know, we traveled to America.
Because he's like four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's three. He's three. He barely turned three.
He just turned three, like, you know, he just before.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, yesterday we went to America.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's a good place.
And then
to,
he clings to me like, this was the first time, you know.
Yeah.
you know, this little dude never really, you know, knew me. He didn't know me. And then, so all he knew was, you know, I could talk to him on the phone to the point that he started calling every cell phone he'd see Papa Mike.
You know? Oh, I see.
He called every phone Papa Mike because I talked to him on the phone like that.
That's very sweet.
But it was an incredible experience. I still have it super vivid in my mind that evening, you know.
So when you saw Bob, what do you remember?
Oh, my God. He was wearing some black jeans, a suit, you know.
I was wearing a jean jacket.
A jean jacket.
Yeah.
But they were black.
Yeah.
And he was just staring at, he was just standing there looking at me and everything I was doing, the noise, et cetera. At the time, I didn't have a car. So I had to wait for a friend who'd take me at the airport to get them. Mm. And that's why we got late there.
I didn't know
that
necessarily
must have been
how
so
to react.
Hard.
Yeah.
Like you have to wait for a ride.
I was like, I wish I was a bird or something, I could fly.
Right.
You know, could just fly there and get everybody under my wings and get home probably.
Yeah.
But a friend of ours did film that little encounter. So that little video is still in our house.
Yeah.
And hopefully at some point.
Digitize it.
Yeah.
That'd be a nice video clip we could add.
I remember the first few weeks you filmed a lot of it. So we have home video of our first experiences in America, which is
and plus that same year, I think a month later, we did record a song and we filmed it too.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. I did put it on a private for now, but it's a little good music video of them tiny little thing singing in French at a time.
Oh,
yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I think this is a good time to close out. Would you like to have another conversation?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, because we got to hear the rest of your settling into America.
A long tale. Yeah.
It's a long tale.
It is, but an important one.
Yes.
You know, to recapture those memories like that.
Yeah.
And talk about it with each other.
Yeah.
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 Well, great. Yeah. Thanks for being vulnerable and sharing your story with us. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We're hearing a very... we haven't had... Actually, you're the first 18-year-old I've interviewed. This is an awesome
experience.
It's
glad to be here. I'm glad to represent our people, 18-year-olds.
Yeah, that's right. Good. All right. Well, we'll continue our conversation next week. In the meantime, do something great as a leader this week. Like every day, do something awesome for somebody else. All right. We'll see you next week.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye.